Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Rachel Maves podcast, and I'm Rachel Maves, your host. Today, we are talking to Brittany Miller. Brittany is the Chief Innovation Officer and Executive Director of the Center for Outcomes-Based Contracting at the Southern Education Foundation, where she leads efforts to transform educational partnerships through outcomes-based contracting. Under her leadership, the center has expanded from 4 pioneering districts to 60 agencies across 25 states, impacting over 29,000 students and establishing a model where at least 40% of provider payment depends on student outcomes. An early innovator who helped develop some of the nation's first outcome-based contracts while at Denver Public Schools, Brittany brings both practitioner experience and strategic vision to scaling the center's impact. She holds a doctorate in curriculum studies and teaching from the University of Denver and enjoys scuba diving and snowboarding in her free time. Welcome, Brittany. I'm really excited to have you joining me today.
Thanks, Rachel. Nice to be here.
So we always start off, we're big at Parsec about stories and understanding the why for people. And I'd love just to give you a chance to share a little bit about your journey and why you chose education and especially how you ended up where you are now in outcomes-based contracting.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rachel. So I started out as a teacher, actually, in the classroom and just had a real passion for education, both for teaching kids and also just understanding how this system, that's something that is, something that everybody experiences. And so everybody has a strong opinion about it because they experience
so true.
It, right? And families, of course, have strong opinions about like what's happening for their own kids. And so they have, you know, both that experience of being in school and then also like having kids in school. So there's a lot of opinion about like how to do education right. And all of those are so critical. And I think we all agree that we really want to do right by kids. And so it's really a matter of understanding, like, how do we do right by kids in a way that's aligned and doesn't drive the teachers and their students in the classroom crazy? Right. And I think that's the part that continues to drive me and is something that I find really valuable in the work that I do now. So I started as a teacher. Worked my through the school district world in Denver Public Schools initially, and always was on the instructional side. Like you said, my doctorate is in curriculum studies and teaching. So how am I leading work nationally focused on contracting, which might typically be more of a business role, and that's really by design in the way that OBC works. Because what I found when I was at a district leadership role and moved into the academics division where we were doing a lot of buying is that there was a lot of things that we were purchasing and, you know, we would have a great relationship between the provider and district at the outset. But then when we actually got into, you know, them working with our schools, with our teams, et cetera, things would start to go awry, right? And what I've learned over time is a lot of it comes from that story that I shared, right? Everybody has an opinion about how to make things right for kids. And without being really clear about what right looks like or what good looks like, we can all just kind of get in each other's way and make the lived experience of a kid in a classroom confusing, right? And incoherent for what we actually need to achieve. And so when I got introduced to outcomes-based contracting and did this for the first time myself, you know, I talk about, it was during the ESSER funding time and I was the, I led a department that was investing all of our ESSER funds that were for outside of the school day and the traditional school day. And so what the high impact tutoring OBC did that I led is it enabled us to get really clear about how we were using our resources because it was really clear about what we expected for students to have happen. And so that's important from a financial perspective. But the more important thing and like the big picture for me is that it also allowed for us to get really, really clear about the most important and valuable resource of all, which is, of course, student time.
Yeah. Right?
So we only have so much time with kids in the classroom on a daily basis. They only have so much time before they're passed on to the next grade level. And so getting really, really clear about the things we're asking teachers and students to do in the classroom in order to accelerate their learning requires us to get super clear about how is that part of their overall coherent learning experience? And then how do we really dive into that in a way that enables teachers, students, the provider, the district to be really focused on the same thing?
Yeah.
And then having a common way to measure that and then align all the systems around it.
So. Yeah. So I want to jump into more about outcomes-based contracting. But before we do that, a little bit just about like what
what was your draw to education in the first place? Why did you become a teacher? And then like, how did it like really hit you for this business side of it coming from curriculum? I'd love to hear that story.
You know, so I was actually an international studies and Spanish civil major. I thought that I was going to be like, you know, some foreign service person or something. And then I think that it was my maybe junior year or sophomore year, one of the two. I took a course on like the history of education in America. And I was fascinated. I was like, I had no idea that all of these different factors ultimately impacted the thing that, you know, is a universal
experiences, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I got really hooked at that point. I ended up minoring in education. I couldn't major in it without extending my time in university, and ended up ultimately joining Teach for America. So that's how I started out, was through Teach for America. And it was like a career change into education for my undergrad. So I knew that I wanted to stay in education long term, right when I started teaching. But I've just always thought that it's such an important part of our overall kind of society, because it's something we all experience. And I think that, again, everybody really cares about it a lot. So that's how do we take that care and passion and make it more coherent and aligned for kids, instead of just kind of what we can see in a lot of classrooms is chaos, not in terms of the way the classroom is working, but in terms of like the system that's impacting what's happening in the classroom.
Yeah. So what drew you then into like this new sector? Because I mean, it is a big shift when you go from public service, and this is something I'm in the midst of experiencing right now, into either the private or nonprofit. What was that impetus for you?
Really, the impetus was outcomes-based contracting when I, you know, decided what I was going to do next. I left Denver Public Schools in the middle of 2022. And so I started at OVC when I was a district leader in 2021. And I was just amazed by how much more productive I could make my relationship with my provider when we had everything really clearly spelled out in the contract. And, you know, we've been working on different implementation challenges, you know, forever in our district. It's like every district does, right? It's really hard to get things implemented at scale effectively. And under an OBC as a middle manager, you know, I had bosses above me, below me, to the side of me in schools, everybody, right? To be able to say, this is what we all agreed to. It's actually in the contract and we're all accountable to this thing, which for our end of the bargain as the district was student attendance, right? So we had to ask students to attend 70% or more of the tutoring sessions they were assigned to. And so that allowed me to be a much more effective middle manager with all those different humans, because there was one thing that we were all accountable to on our end.
Right.
And then the thing on the provider end was, we're going to get the outcomes for the kids as long as they show up and attend.
Yeah.
Right. So that relationship was really valuable. And then in terms of like moving from instruction into the business world as a female leader in this space, what I really appreciate is that I worked in district for a long time. And a lot of times in district leadership, you know, you tend to see, and there's no statistics that I'm quoting on this, but like my experience is that you see more female leaders in the instructional roles and more male leaders in the business roles. Right?
Yeah, that's 100% true. Yeah.
Yeah. And so having a seat at the buying table as an instructional leader can be challenging, right? There's of course the gender dynamics, but there's also the fact that as an instructional leader, we know a thing or two about like how you actually educate students and make sure that
just a little bit. Yes.
Right. On the business side, like in the past, that hasn't translated to a contract.
Yeah.
Right. And so it gives this gender dynamic a more even playing field is what I've seen, because I was able to talk with the financial leaders in our districts about why we had to engage in this type of partnership. Yeah. And it really enables them to be more attentive to what the academic function needs in order to be successful when the outcomes and the implementation criteria are actually in the contract, right?
Yeah.
So that was something that really drove me to want to do more of this work, is seeing how we could really uplift the voice of the people that really understand how to educate students alongside their business colleagues that understand how to negotiate a contract so that that partnership can, and our resources are more aligned to what kids need in the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. So at its, because we have some people that listen that aren't educators. We're going to have some people who are listening that this is the first time they're hearing about outcomes-based contracting. So could you just give, like, what is your 30-second elevator speech around, at the base level, what is outcome-based contracting and why is it important?
Yeah. So in an outcomes-based contract, we're talking about how the contract between a school district and their service provider that's delivering services to students, their relationship works contractually, right? In a typical contract in education, when you're buying something as a district leader, you pay for the services that are delivered. And there historically has been very little tracking of whether those services actually made it to students or not, and whether or not outcomes were achieved, right?
Yeah.
And so what an outcomes-based contract does is it creates a relationship where the provider receives a base payment upfront for the services that are delivered, like you would in a traditional contract, right? And then there's a large portion, we recommend at least 40%, is contingent on meeting agreed upon student outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is it creates a mutual accountability relationship between the district and provider, where the district is not going to pay the full amount if the outcomes aren't achieved. But then the part of it that makes it really sticky is that there's a language in the contract, we call it the mutual accountability language, that articulates what the district has to do in order to hold the provider accountable for those contingent payments. Yeah. So that's the way that it works. And we've been doing this in high impact tutoring work, in educational technology, instructional interventions. So your products that students do, like the adaptive work online with, and then in teacher professional learning for their high quality instructional materials.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And I love one of the things that you said earlier that I think is critical around the work that you guys are doing is that, one, it requires the vendor to actually provide like clear guidelines for successful implementation to the district. And then the district to say, okay, this is our part. We have to do this if we want to see it be successful. Because I feel like that right there is often the missing gap of the implementation piece. It's exciting work that you're doing. So from that lens, Brittany, being a former practitioner, leading that work and curriculum, now being on this side of outcomes-based contracting and leading this work, in our current educational context and climate, what keeps you up at night?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that keeps me up at night, more broadly speaking, within our educational climate, is that our schools are not getting funded at the rate that they need to in order to serve students effectively, right? And that's not to say that there isn't wasteful spending in education. There is, and I could talk about that a lot in terms of how OBC can help us get better at that. And at the end of the day, ensuring that schools are well-funded and that teachers are making a competitive salary and that our students are living or learning in environments that, you know, have the building set up that they need in order to be successful, and like the HVAC mm-hmm. needs and the AC needs, right? Like all of that is expensive. And what keeps me up at night is knowing that a lot of the services that students need in order to be successful are getting cut as a result of continued funding declines in education. So that certainly keeps me up at night, and why I'm very passionate about the work we do. Not to say that we need to, you know, defund education or get rid of the dollars that are available. I believe we need more dollars, and we also need to do a better job of realizing efficiencies with the dollars we do have.
That's right. Yeah.
Particularly from grant sources that we can really use to drive toward, you know, students getting what they need and being successful.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear just your ideas for solutions about that, because I don't know what your experience has been, but coming from the practitioner lens, I mean, this is a real muscle that districts, one, haven't been trained in, and two, is so critically important and necessary, but need that support of what does that mean and look like? How do we really get clear around ROI and make those tough decisions based off of the data and metrics that we have? So as you think about what that looks like in school districts, what are one or two ways that would really make a significant change in addressing those issues?
Yeah. So I'll talk about the five ingredients that we say are critical for an OBC, and that impacts a lot of the system surrounding not just that individual contract, but kind of how the overall system functions. And so those ingredients are a clearly defined student population, right? So don't buy things for everybody all the time. And we see a lot of that in ed tech, but like actually focus on who needs it, right? And what the data is at the baseline. The second ingredient is clearly defined outcomes and metrics. So getting really clear about not just we want kids to grow a year in math, but like we want this particular subset of students to grow according to this assessment that actually is a part of our infrastructure and system and accountability framework, right? Yeah. The third ingredient is contingent outcome parents. It matters that you have dollars that are contingent because it is a power lever, quite frankly, that keeps everybody in check to make sure that the agreement is upheld. Mm-hmm. And then the last two we talk about together are mutual accountability and continuous improvement, which means that you outline in the contract. So in legal language, you're saying, I, district, commit to this. You, provider, commit to this. Mm-hmm. And we'll be in violation of the contingent payment part of the contract if we don't do those things. But here are the remedies we're going to do along the way if we don't get it right the first time. Because guess what? You're not going to, right? Implementation is hard or we wouldn't be where we are. And so those remedies really articulate, like, what are the things that you can do along the way in order to make the partnership more successful for kids before you start to say, okay, great, now the contingent payments are at risk on one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And then with that, the way that we actually make sure that that happens in implementation is through the continuous improvement framework that's built into the contract that says, these are the meetings that we're going to commit to having. Mm. And we talk about, like, you know, you all have talking meetings and then there's working meetings. We all like working meetings better, right? And so in a working meeting, right, we're going to have the people that need to be there, which is really valuable for a provider because they frequently get the runaround with district leaders. We're busy people and we're like, we like you, but we don't have time, right?
Yeah.
So they do need to show up, right? And then with that, these are the data sets that they're going to review. This is who's in charge of bringing the data. And this is the purpose of the meeting and what the decisions are that we're going to make, right?
Yep.
So all of that is outlined again in the contract with like when data will be available. So it's just a much more clear and coherent arrangement in order to really drive toward student learning.
Yeah, I love that. It's interesting because this model is being talked about more and more and more. And I've seen it in like varying implementation stages, I'll say, Brittany, where like what mm-hmm. you're talking about makes perfect sense, is so dialed in, is so critical and clear. And then I've seen it where those pieces actually don't happen. And it ends up being really messy and it still has that kind of OBC name on it, but it's not, mm-hmm. I would argue with those critical components, not truly OBC. Yeah. Are you guys starting to see that as it becomes more and more popular? And how are you thinking about that type of risk mitigation for that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So we hear a lot about OBCs in the wilds and we're like, oh, can you say more about that?
That's a good way of putting it, OBCs yeah. in the wild.
I'm like, it's an endearing term, but let's talk a little bit more. One of the critical ways is just getting really clear about that definition.
Yeah.
So over the past several years, right, we've had these successful examples over and over again when we've directly supported this partnership with the district and provider.
Yeah.
Well, once something works, people are going to want to do more of it, right? And yeah. so we have developed the standards of excellence for outcomes-based contracting for two of the verticals or product lines that we're working in, for high-impact tutoring and then for ed tech interventions, where mm-hmm. we have a full year of data now to say, okay, we understand well enough what the seats look like. It's the same five things, right? But then there's specific language in each of them in terms of like, what does the mutual accountability language actually need to look like for an ed tech intervention?
Yeah.
And so that's all documented in our standards and then our contract templates that are on the website, you know, open source, anybody can download them and use them.
Yeah.
So that's like the resource part of it. The way that we're thinking about it in terms of this balancing act that we have to do always in leadership and systems work in particular, right, is how do you create that balance of support and accountability for the folks that are doing work in the system?
Yeah.
And so we think about that in terms of the support being either, you know, these open source resources or, you know, coming to our convening that we had a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
You know, our cohorts where we have districts that work through this and are in much deeper partnership with us alongside their providers. And we just launched a provider learning series as well, right? So that's all the support function in terms of like making sure that people understand it. And then there's the accountability function, which is also really important. And so what we've been doing from that perspective is starting to work at the state level. So we're working with 4 states right now. We're working on confirming our 5th as we speak. And with that, we're working with them to say, great, let's do that direct support model with your district staff at different LEAs that really want to take this model on.
Yes.
We'll also do some training for providers so they understand it. And then through this partnership, let's identify what the infrastructure can look like at the state level to also have that accountability function, right?
Yeah.
And so then that can come from more of the grant making, where we can start to say, great, if you're going to say that this is an outcomes-based contract, let's actually evaluate it 5 criteria. And then let's sure that we're tracking the data so we really understand what's working for which students under what conditions. Mm-hmm. So we can better with the resources we have available and make sure quality is getting into the classroom.
I just think this is so timely, one, with budget constraints that we have that everyone's talking about right now at the federal and state level, but then also this like massive sweep of AI and technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, even just getting clear around what is it that you're trying to accomplish with this and what is that success criteria? What would you expect to see once this is implemented? I think it's just a game changer at the very beginning. Yeah. So this is our last question, and I'm super interested, Brittany, to hear where you go with this one. But what question in education are we not asking that we really should be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the common theme of the question that we're not asking in education that we should be is, what does this actually look like for the student and the teacher in the classroom tomorrow? Mm-hmm. So if we can stay really grounded in the lived experience of a kid who's using this technology, who has this whole environment around them that is a part of their experience. It's not just about from the computer screen, right? Then I think we can get a lot more clear about how to make all that stuff align. Because when you have it really clearly defined in terms of what success looks like, and you just stay focused on the student experience, we found over and over again that you can shore up a lot of the other kind of like confusing factors that impact how that happens for the kid in the classroom.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well said. Great place to wrap up our time together. Thanks for your time, Brittany. I really appreciated it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Rachel.
And just a friendly reminder, when it comes to return on investment with your school vendors, always open the conversation up to your students, parents, and guardians and families. Their input on how well something is working is invaluable to decision-making processes. To that end, we at Parsec have developed our Parsec Reel platform that allows for greater community input while alleviating the lift for admin and school staff. So check out Parsec Reel and how it could help you and your team by visiting parseceducation.com.